So there's a phrase that comes up when we talk about acts of terror, senseless violence, which implies that there can be no comprehensible reason, no sane rationale for shooting up a nightclub or loading a truck with explosives. But terrorism experts tell us that that's not actually true. There are real, compelling reasons and motivations, some of which we share, which can drive ordinary people to commit extreme acts of violence.
I think the closest I ever came to traveling overseas to fight was one time I was in the mosque with a few of my friends. Two of them, they were asked right on the spot, do you want to go to Yemen? And they said, sure. And that was the last I saw of them, heard from them. Don't know what happened. Just disappeared. I was ready to go, but I hadn't done enough of the prep work, so to speak. My name is Mubeen Sheikh. I'm a former extremist turned government-level counterterrorism expert.
One of the biggest misconceptions about terrorists is that they're nothing like us. They don't have the same feelings, values, ideals. They've somehow parted company from the human race. Well, today, on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we're going to show you that that's not the case. We're going to ask you to imagine an extremist who is maybe not that different from the guy next door. Someone like Mubeen Sheikh.
I was born in a time where there was one mosque in all of Toronto. I come from a religious family. We would go to the mosque at least once a day. So it was me going to public school by daytime and going to Quran school by evening time and basically setting the stage for what I like to think of as an identity crisis that would manifest acutely later on in my life. So I was 17 and my parents were in India. And I decided, hey, the family's gone. Let me have a party. And, you know, that evening, those people just started showing up, as expected, of course. There was easily 100 people there, easily. And I'm standing on the veranda with a friend of mine. And he says, hey, who's that? And I look over and I can see the outline of an adult male with a bright white hat and a bright white robe. And I realized, oh boy, this is my uncle. And I'll be honest, I almost pissed my pants. And my uncle just walked up to me and slapped me in the face. And then suddenly he just bellowed really loudly, you know, get out, all of you. And, oh, man, you could hear the stampede of people running out. They literally ran out. He, of course, had me in a grip. And that's when he said, you know, he goes, you know, people pray in this house, you know. People read Quran in this house. You know, what have you done? You know, what have you done? And it was just a feeling of absolute guilt and shame that just overcame me. I just wanted to not be in existence at that moment and realized, okay, the only way that I can fix this is for me to get religious, quote unquote. And getting religious, quote unquote, in my context was a group called the Tablighi Jamaat. Now, the Tablighi Jamaat is an apolitical, religiously conservative group that proselytizes to other Muslims. So basically, they convince Muslims to be more observant. And so one of the things that they have is a program, if you will, of 4 months. And the way that they had set it up was you would do 2 months in India, 2 months in Pakistan. And in May of 1995, got on a plane and flew to India. The Tablighi Jamaat, they do have a headquarters, if you will, in Delhi, and you live in the mosque. You eat there, you sleep there, and your daily activities would be, you know, you would go around the local area, talk to the people. How are you? This Jamaat has come from Canada. Please come to the mosque. We have some lectures, things like that. After spending 2 months in India, I was then sent to Pakistan. And in Pakistan, I was sent to a city called Quetta. Quetta was the stronghold of the Taliban, and it still is. And so just like I did in India, I would walk around the local area to see, you know, what's going on and who's there and who I could talk to and basically invite them to the mosque. And as I was walking around, I could see some guys, they had turbans, beards, robes. So I thought, oh, these are, you know, other religious guys that let me go and talk to them. So as I came close to them, I saw that, in fact, they were armed. They had rocket-propelled grenades, AK-47s, other weapons, ammunition. And I quickly realized these guys aren't religious guys. There's something else. I didn't know what else and who they were. And so I basically gave them the same talk that I would give everyone else, right? To bring about change in the world, you do this and you do that. And they listened to me. And the one guy actually said, look, if you really want to change the world, you do it with this. And he held up his AK-47. And he says, you know, by jihad is how you change things, is how you change the world. You know, they had this swashbuckling, you know, way about them. It was almost like the manifestation of the ancient heroes of the Muslim world. And I became completely enamored by them and bit by the so-called jihadi bug. So I returned to Toronto, Canada, of course, in September 1995. And I was thinking about what they had said. It really appealed to me. And as I began to think about it more, I started to become bored with the Tablighi Jamaat. And so that's when I realized, okay, this is not for me. And I knew of a mosque nearby, actually, where there were guys who were a little more open about their political views or about politics in general. But this was less about politics, per se, and more so about the idea of this jihadist identity. For you to self-identify as a jihadi or as a mujahid, somebody who is a combatant, this is really what it came down to. So in 1998, Osama bin Laden came out with his fatwa. And of course, the bombings that took place thereafter in Tanzania. And so that was our religion, if you will, this very militant worldview, clearly defined enemies. We're God's elect. You know, we're doing what other Muslims are too cowardly to do or too ignorant to do on a religious level. And this is how we saw ourselves. In terms of the anger that manifested in my life, I think my anger, even at that time, came from a childhood sexual abuse with the family relative, actually. And even to this day, I mean, I'm 40 years old now. There are entire blocks of my childhood which I just don't remember. You know, I remember knowing that I was angry. After that, I did confront him, actually. I threatened to break his back when I was much older and bigger and stronger. But I knew if I killed him, everyone would know that I did it. So he's still alive. You know, I got over it, I think. So 2001, the September 11 attacks happened. That prompts me to reconsider my worldview and decide, look, I don't know my religion properly. I don't know Arabic. I hadn't studied it in any formal way. So I decided I was going to move to Syria. And so in 2002, I moved to Syria, early 2002. I go to an Islamic university and I meet this scholar. And his nickname was Sheikh Al-Bahar. Al-Bahar means like the ocean. And they called him this because his knowledge was like the ocean. And basically, I mean, the first day that we met, I gave my name, and I had named my oldest son Mujahid, which is one who does jihad. And so he called me on it, basically saying, what, are you a jihadi? And I said, yeah, I am. And he goes, what does jihad mean? And I said, oh, it means fighting. And he goes, that's not what jihad means. And so that was his approach. So we spoke after class. And then I would then study with him Tuesdays and Thursdays. And if what he did was effectively, he debunked my extremist interpretations, you know, verse by verse by verse, looking at the history of Islam, all the things that happened. because one of the main problems of extremist Muslims is that they have a very romanticized view of history. They think, you know, under Sharia and caliphate, we all lived happily ever after, right? And that was never the case. So that systematic debunking is really what sealed the de-radicalization process for me. You know, a former white supremacist friend of mine, Arno Michaelis, he's a Buddhist now. And he says, hurt people hurt people. If you come from a broken background, the likelihood of you becoming a bad person is greater than if you don't come from a broken background. So then when somebody like that looks at a jihadi video with a guy getting his head cut off or shot in the back of the head or whatever, that's nothing. That's actually something good. Like you get satiated by looking at that level of violence. So these are the kinds of things that can push people into extremism.
Mubin Sheikh is a former extremist who became a counterterrorism expert. If you want to read more about his journey, check out his memoir, Undercover Jihadi. Raymond Tangakar produced our story.